Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Lou Ann Crane.
Welcome to this edition of Family Talk as we address a very precious and heartwarming family relationship, one that's not actually talked about a whole lot, but Ryan, I know this discussion is one that you're especially looking forward to.
I really am. I've been on the road a bunch. I was gone last night. I'll speak tonight, tomorrow, 2 days from now. I don't know where I'm at, but I wanted to be here for this one.
Yeah, we scheduled it for today so you could join us.
And I appreciate it. I think our listeners are really going to enjoy our conversation today. And for me, it's very, very near and dear to my heart. And I know that it is yours too, Dad.
It certainly is, Ryan. And my heart is wrapped around this topic, frankly, for the same reason that it is for yours. And we'll explain what we're talking about in a minute. But we have a guest who's going to help us dive into today's topic. Before we get into it, we want to introduce her or reintroduce her. Her name is Julie Barnhill. And it's a pleasure to welcome her back to Family Talk. This is the third time, I believe, that you've been with us, Julie.
It's
obvious we kind of like you.
I kind of like it here, too.
And you always have unique things to say. And some of them are often very personal, and you're willing to open your life and let people see who you are and where you've been, which allows our listeners to identify with you because others will have walked a similar road. For those who don't remember or didn't hear one of the earlier programs, Julie is the mother of three children. She's been married to Rick for 23 years now. She's authored a dozen books, and she speaks all around the world. Hey, I want to focus in this broadcast on your early childhood, what you have been through, and some of the questions that it raised for you. And rather than give our listeners the bottom line to start with, let's just go to your early childhood.
Okay.
Talk about the first four and a half years, right?
Yes.
And we'll explain why that's a demarcation.
All right.
Yeah.
I think probably the biggest thing, you know, is that at age three, I was put into foster care with two of my sisters and was raised in my biological family is a very dysfunctional family, alcoholism.
You don't know a lot about that, do you?
Dr. Dobson, I don't really know anything factual that I can really hang my hat on. There's a lot of conjecture, kind of rumor and talk amongst some family, but nothing, you know, just black and white, this is the way that it was. And even age three is, I've kind of just declared that to be the age because I don't even have a definitive
age. You're not sure when it was.
Exactly.
And you really don't remember anything about your biological father?
No, nothing at all.
Yeah. A little bit about your biological mother, but we'll talk about that later. Okay, then you were put into foster care.
Yes. Two of my sisters and I were placed in a home together, and we referred to the foster care mother as Aunt Bonnie, and she was a magnificent woman. If there's anything in me that knows how to love, I mean, she plays a huge part in that. People would drop their strays, their dogs and cats, you know, at her house because they knew that she'd take care of them. And one of my memories, and this probably was age three and a half maybe, I was in a Red Falcon station wagon, and the back of the, you could roll the window down with a crank, and the exhaust pipe like came into the back, and you'd hang over the side. You didn't know anything about car seats or anything. And we were in that car, my two sisters and I, taking a German Shepherd dog to the vet, and Aunt Bonnie, who was driving, was crying. And I remember that because her heart, she was upset about that dog being hurt and injured. So that's one of my earliest memories that I have. So we stayed in her home with her husband, Cecil, and loved upon, adored and cherished, you know, foster kids, but you wouldn't have known anything different than we belonged to her.
Now, Julie, you now know you're one of six. Any idea why it was just you and two sisters that got put into foster care, or is that still all just rumor and
no? There was an older sister who was kind of in her preteens that I gather was old enough to kind of live with different family members mm-hmm. to be moved around. The two brothers were adopted together to a family. Mm-hmm. I don't have any memories of them at all.
Sure.
But they were adopted, and then my two sisters and I were placed in a foster care situation together.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you stayed in that foster care situation for how long?
Well, I stayed in it. Eventually, Aunt Bonnie, who I referred to as Aunt Bonnie, yes. the foster parent, she eventually became my grandmother through adoption. Her son and daughter-in-law adopted me. So it was very amazing that, you know, in those early years of child development, here was this woman that loved greatly, and then I just transferred right into calling her Grandma Bonnie. My two older sisters, you know, there are things that you don't really think about. Maybe I'm just weird, but I didn't think about how traumatic this was, this memory, and what happened. But I do remember this clearly. My two sisters and I were in the living room with Aunt Bonnie at the time. You know, none of us had been adopted. Yeah. And a couple pulled into the driveway in a car, and the car was left idling. I remember that. I remember the sound of that car idling. And it was a 1970s house with a huge plate glass living room window, avocado green sculptured carpet, and a turquoise recliner.
And those memories are still with you.
Yeah, I remember that. And so I was 3 and a half, probably at that age. And that couple came into the house, and there was something in, there was something in me that knew something was not right. I don't know how to articulate that. But my sisters and I began to hold hands. And they told the two older siblings that they were going to go get a hamburger and ice cream. And, of course, I wanted to go. But I wasn't invited to go. And I remember someone kind of prying our fingers apart because I knew something was.
The essence of it is that you were not going to be going.
No. And no one said anything. I mean, it was just, we're going to take the girls, get hamburger and ice cream. So they left. The door shut. They got in the car. The car door shut. They backed out. And I didn't see my sisters again for over a decade.
Oh,
almost two decades.
How was that explained to you?
It wasn't.
Really?
Not a word. Not that I can remember. And I would think I would remember because, you know, some of those, that day I remember.
Did you have a lump in your throat?
You know, I wish I remembered if I really cried or not. You know, there are times I'm like, did I just kind of compartmentalize that even at that young of an age and tucked that away? I do remember kind of hiding behind Aunt Bonnie. And, you know, it'd be interesting. She passed away some years ago. But I can't imagine that she didn't say something. But maybe she didn't. I mean, I just didn't hear anything.
And the next thing you know, you're in another family.
Yeah, you know.
In the process of being adopted.
Yeah, you know, Norman and Jean, my parents, they would visit, of course, my Aunt Bonnie, you know, the foster situation. And they didn't want children. They were in their early 40s and had never thought they wanted children. And my mom has said to me, you know, you're just too cute. You know, we just, you know, we had to have you. So, I can't remember anything changing. I mean, I was in Aunt Bonnie's home and then it just became, you know, I was in Grandma's home.
So here you are at 4 and a half years of age, approximately, and you've been in three home situations. And no one really sat down and said, now, Julie, let us tell you what's going on here.
No. You know, I always knew I was adopted, and it was I was proud of that. And when looking back, I'm like, that was really a blessing because, you know, it was 1969 when my court papers were official. So that was still a time when, you know, it wasn't like adoption is today. And there was a baby shower for me. You know, my parents have pictures of that. So a lot of my mom's friends didn't have children. So I really became the daughter to like Cynthia and Junior. They were like my godparents and Barbara and Betty. So I was loved and cherished.
All right, Ryan, this is where you come in, because in 1970, you had another experience related to adoption. Explain it.
I've found out since then my birth mom was 16 and no longer dating the guy that got her pregnant. And on August 31st, 1970, I was adopted into the Dobson household. And it's always been my home. But You know, I know so many adopted kids. I talk about adoption, but I got to be honest, my head's kind of spinning. This is an unusual story. This is not something that happens all the time.
Yeah. In other words, adoption is often a very smooth kind of.
Well, I think if you looked at if you were an observer, I mean, I think to an observer, it all went smoothly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think my parents would, you know, they're like, we love you. You've always been cherished. But it's when you look at some of these things about development and about who you are and where you come from. But culturally, you know, I think maybe in the 60s and the 50s, it just, adoption wasn't spoken about, period. I got a job, Dr. Dobson, one summer in college. The courthouse had a fire, and my dad got me a job there, paid really well. And I found this file of someone who lived in my hometown. It was his adoption papers. And I was like, oh, I didn't know he was adopted. So I went home that night, sitting around the table with my folks. I'm like, hey, you know, I didn't know so-and-so was adopted. And they both looked at me kind of like, how did you know that? I said, well, I saw his adoption papers. And then, you know, nothing was really said. So,
all right. That's a key feature in your story, because what is different in your case is this lack of identity. Not knowing where you came from or who you are or what your heritage was or how it all came about, how you happened to be there. Nobody sat down and worked with you through those things.
No.
Now, Ryan, in your situation now, you didn't know those things either, but it didn't matter.
No. About the time that I would have had big identity issues and struggle with that, a lot of my friends who are adopted will say, you know, around the sixth grade, I really started to struggle with abandonment and where did I come from? But that's when the last name Dobson exploded. My identity issues all came from, who are you? You know, you're James Dobson's son. And I never thought about the adoption side because I was contending with being a Dobson. But I've had lots of friends that talk about that and, you know,
they struggle with it.
They struggle. They do.
You know this story, I think, but you only ask once in your childhood about the adoption itself. You were sitting on the floor. Your mom was working in the kitchen, and you looked up at her. I think you were about 6 or 7 or 8 years of age. You looked up at her and said, Mom, didn't the woman want me? And your mom said, oh, Ryan, I know she did. We don't know her. We don't know anything about her. But it could have been that she couldn't take care of you. It could have been she didn't have a husband. You wouldn't have had a father. And she loved you so much that she let us raise you. And she answered all your questions in that one conversation. You never brought it up again.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's the interesting thing. I think I knew that, and I've heard the words, and yet I know so many people that struggle with identity and abandonment, but it really hit home when Laura was pregnant with Lincoln.
Exactly.
We went to every baby class. I mean, every prenatal class, everything about the development of your child, how to install a car seat, how to childproof your house. We went to everything, but Lincoln was born on October 16th, which is normally my busy season for speaking. And she went to a class one night by herself. It was the first night of a class. And I got back to my hotel and I asked her how it went. And she was saying all the great things and this is where he's at and this is what he's understanding. And then she stopped and she paused. She said, but it was kind of weird too. I said, why was it weird? And she goes, well, they kind of stared at me. I go, baby, they think you're single. And she went, oh, Ryan, they do. And she's like, well, you have to come to class next time. And I said, well, of course I'll come. And we laughed about it. We talked some more. And I hung up the phone. And, I mean, it was like getting hit with a bat. I mean, all the wind just got knocked out of me that my birth mom was 16, was taken out of school, didn't have a boyfriend, and couldn't call a husband at night, didn't have anybody who she was married to that was there every day making sure that things were taken care of and going to doctor's appointments and doing all that kind of stuff. Did her parents go to those? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But it's different. Mm-hmm. And yet she carried me for a full term and then made the decision to hand me over to a family she thought would do a better job. Not abandonment.
We still don't know who she is.
Not a clue.
But, you know, I have great love and appreciation for her.
Yeah.
She was willing to do that. Mm-hmm. And she gave you life, and she gave us your life. And that was one of the highlights of my life. And I wish that someday I could tell her that, but we don't know anything. It was a closed adoption.
It was. It was very closed. I was kind of hoping for some medical information. I would have loved to have that. Their entire assessment of my birth mother's medical history was – she was in generally good health. Really? At 16? That's amazing. What a surprise.
And that conversation you get to have every time you go to the doctors. Is there any biological history of?
Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. So now you're 4 and a half and now you're being adopted. And the years begin to pile up. And what was going on inside of you?
You know, they were good. I mean, what's interesting, it's so different from Ryan, see, is that there were several people who knew my biological mother, and there were people who had answers, you know. Yeah. So for me, it was like 45 minutes away is an aunt that could have answered some things, that type of thing.
But they didn't.
But they didn't.
Did you ask?
Well, I didn't know them. So, you know, it was just like you're in this community. I remember one time my grandma and I were going through Temple Stevens grocery store, and this woman, I noticed this woman just kept kind of looking at me, and we took the cart over by her, and she talked to her a little bit, and then she said, Julianne, she said, this is your aunt. Mm. And it ended up, it actually was the sister of the man that, you know, they said was my father. So that's another whole twist.
Yeah, well, you have a hard time explaining all those relationships.
I really
don't
do
you?
Because he's, you know, the father of those siblings older than me isn't my father.
All right, let's fast forward because the time's getting away. When you're in junior high, what was going on?
You know, there seems to be an age around 12, 13, a lot of times with girls. And I'm sure it's hormonal and puberty. But
no
I really
doubt. Everything.
Absolutely.
Everything.
Everything's about the estrogen. Yeah. And, you know, I've said this before in an interview with you, but I would always wonder whose hands I had because my best friend and her sisters and her mom, they all had the same hand, the shape and fingernails. Mm-hmm. And I would just think, whose hands do I have? Mm-hmm. And it really began to eat at me. And I really began, you know, I wish I could see my sisters. I wish I could talk to my sisters. I didn't have any idea where they lived. And I began to pray at that age, you know, just God, you know, I just like, and I was bugging my grandma for more information. And she probably felt like maybe she wasn't her place to say something if my mom and dad, I didn't want to upset, you know.
Yeah.
But were you agitated at that time?
I was. And, you know, I didn't realize this until later with my daughter and something that happened with her. But I would bite myself. I would get so angry. And I've got a scar, you know, like on my right wrist to this day. Mm-hmm. And I would just bite myself until I would almost bleed. And it wasn't until years down the road and I read about cutting and kind of, you know, hurting yourself, that I was like, wow, there was a lot of just repressed just anger and sadness, you know?
So many, many teenagers today are going through that. And it's a very complex behavior. About 4% of children eventually are cutters, and it's a terribly difficult thing, and it is hard to understand. Why would anybody hurt themselves? Mm-hmm. It really comes out of self-hatred. Mm-hmm. It comes out frequently of sexual abuse in early childhood. And you don't know whether that occurred for you or not, but it often does. And it's often related to not feeling that you have a place, that you're lovable, that anybody cares. It's related to guilt. It's related to anger, and especially just a lack of acceptability to the human race. Hmm. And so it's a form of not only self-hatred, but self-punishment. It is taking that out on oneself. It's also related to serotonin which is a neurotransmitter in the brain, and there's less serotonin frequently in cutters so that the brain doesn't work exactly the same. All I could
room.
Say about you from it is that there was some discomfort related to your early childhood that was still with you at that time, and it tells us that all was not well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was cherished and. You know, I was well liked in school. Got in trouble for talking too much all the time in my classes.
I can't believe that.
I don't know anybody else that happened.
Nobody
to.
Like that, Ron. No one. And it's interesting to hear that. You know, and as a 45-year-old woman, to hear that, and to think, wow, you know, here's this junior high girl, and all this is going on. You know. In life and in her mind.
Doctor, I'm struck that there's adoptive parents listening right now that this is kind of causing some anxiety. You know, they're thinking, we've provided a healthy, wonderful, loving environment for these children. And yeah, they get to be about 10, 11, and 12, and they start exhibiting this kind of rebellious behavior. Did I do something wrong? And you know, help them understand
most
that.
Most likely not. But I want to tell you, whatever path your children take, they will have problems. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the human experience.
That's
and
right.
Those that are not adopted go through
exactly.
Self-hatred and disrespect for themselves and feelings of rejection and feelings of inferiority. Mm-hmm. It's human nature.
So for an parent to put all the blame on themselves, that is just that's unfair.
It's not fair, and it's often not related to adoption, mm-hmm. but adoption gets blamed for it. Mm-hmm. And I think adoption is an absolutely wonderful institution.
That's
it
right.
is a great thing mm-hmm. to give a child a home and love and care. Mm-hmm. And there may be some bumps in the road, but there will be mm-hmm. for a biological child too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know?
Julie and I were talking earlier about this whole shift between adoption years and years ago almost being the secret that you would mm-hmm. hide. And whereas now it really is celebrated, you were chosen. Mm-hmm. When I think about the whole concept of adoption, we all know in Scripture it talks about our Heavenly Father and how mm-hmm. we are sons by adoption. It's a precious, precious gift. And I'm so glad now that the tide has turned and it's not this cloud of shame.
The cloud of shame is related to out of wedlock births primarily. That's why they didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
Because in those days, you shipped a girl off when she got pregnant and nobody knew where she went.
Mm-hmm.
And then she comes back with a baby. And frequently can't take care of the baby and gives the baby up for adoption, and people don't want to talk about that. Now that's totally changed. By the way, you mentioned Scripture. You know, Moses was adopted. And, you know, the place that he had in God's scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
And Hannah had a little boy named Samuel that she allowed Eli to essentially adopt. Yeah. And Jesus was adopted by Joseph. There are many examples of adoption in a very positive way. And I tell you, you want to see God's heart. Look at what he says in the Scripture about the widow and the fatherless mm-hmm. child. He obviously has a very tender place in his heart for the vulnerable, for children without a father and mothers, widows without a husband. Julie, there is so much here for us to talk about. We've tried to encapsulate your entire life story in one short program, and that's not possible. So we're going to ask you to come back and be with us tomorrow. Can you do that?
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
And we'll pick up right here with your story.
And we'll be looking forward to that as well, Julie. In the meantime, if this program has stirred some issue in your own heart and life, and you would just like someone to pray with you, give us a call. We would love to talk and pray with you. You can reach us at 877-732-6825, 877-732-6825. 732-6825.
Luann, this is just one of the ways we're focusing on the Sanctity of Human Life Month here in January.
And Ryan, adoption is a huge component of that. If you'd like to go a little deeper on this subject, we have a number of resources, beginning with a 3-CD collection of some of our favorite Family Talk broadcasts dealing with this issue, covering topics like abortion, adoption, and the precious gifts that our children with special needs are to us.
And My Dad's January newsletter focuses on the sanctity of all human life and the wonderful success this effort has gained in the past election. Request that now, the CD collection and My Dad's newsletter at myfamilytalk.com.
And while you're there, right on our homepage, you'll find a verse and prayer every day this week, all designed to help you focus your mind and your heart on issues of life. Again, it begins at myfamilytalk.com.
And our phone number one more time is 877-732-6825. Thanks for being with us, and don't miss the conclusion of our discussion with Julie Barnhill. Hey everybody, Ryan Dobson here, letting you know that you can hear me live every day at noon Eastern and 9 Pacific at groundedradio.com. It's a live show where we talk about faith, culture, and the world around us, and how to be better Christians. I hope you'll join us at groundedradio.com.